Welcome to Encounter. I'm your host today, Robin Jones. Unfortunately, this is a pre-recorded interview, and as much as I would have liked to have this particular guest live in the studio, it may just have to be some other time when he wanders through Oklahoma. My guest today is Dr. Greg Bahnsen. He is calls himself many things in this biographical sketch I have, but I guess the one that jumps to my eye is apologist and just speaker, lecturer. And he is coming through Oklahoma, speaking at some of the local universities, specifically OSU. How would you define what your ministry or job or calling is, relative to maybe even defining apologists, and also what you do on the university campuses?
Thanks, Robin. It's nice being here with you in Oklahoma City. My ministry with the Southern California Center for Christian Studies is interested in presenting Christianity as a world and life view, not only to God's people, that they might understand the breadth of the Christian faith, but also as a challenge to the world to see that the way in which we look at this world in which we live and the way in which we live in this world is going to be directed by some kind of ultimate commitment, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or an atheist, a humanist, whatever it may be. And we like to explore the implications of that. The Christianity is a very broad perspective. It's a philosophy of life. And it's one that we think is defensible. That's why I do apologetics. That's not saying we're sorry for being Christians. That's a way of saying that Christianity is worthy of defense. And we believe that Christianity applies beyond just the walls of the church and our prayer life and so forth. We think it directs everything that we do to the glory of God.
Well, I don't remember the exact order of the word you said earlier, but you present a biblical people to think as with a biblical worldview or a life view, or you said a long phrase there. That seems like kind of obvious to me. You mean, would you say the vast majority of Christians do not have a biblical worldview in the way that you're presenting it? Could you kind of define that down a little bit more?
Sure. I'm glad that you say that it seems obvious, because that's
of course
what we're trying to do. But you would be surprised then to find not only the number of Christians that are startled to realize that what they do in politics, economics, education, recreation, whatever, should be directed by their Christian faith as well as their prayer and evangelism, but maybe also a bit discouraged to find out that there's some resistance in the Christian community to that idea. We have lived...
You mean playing basketball can be a... God is interested in that in terms of who we are?
Yes, if we don't play basketball to the glory of God, we shouldn't play basketball.
That's what I should say. I mean, playing basketball can be done to the glory of God.
Sure it can. And it is done by some people that way, and others are trying to do it that way. But as you know, many people play basketball, one, for their own entertainment or their own glory. And God didn't put us in this world simply to satisfy ourselves. Paul speaks in Philippians of those who have their belly as their God. Now, that isn't just for overweight people. Mm-hmm. That's also for anybody who seeks satisfaction, you know, their own personal satisfaction is their highest commitment in life. And Christians have been taught for many, many years in the United States that there's a difference between sacred matters and secular matters. And so, of course, you glorify God in sacred matters, but your God is your belly when it comes to secular matters. You satisfy yourself when it comes to politics and recreation, the way you think. Jesus told us that the first and the greatest commandment is to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, strength, and mind. And so we should learn to think as Christians. We should learn to live as Christians in all areas of life, not just in the church, not just in our families, but in all walks of life.
And I think for maybe some church-type people or churchgoers, an example that is in my personal history is when I would plan gym nights, is what we call them at our church, for a certain group of people in our church. We'd play volleyball and this and that and the other. And there was a constant resistance from someone who said, well, we need to have a devotion then. We need to have a... And I think that is a great example of, I'm here thinking, why do we need... Do you see? I mean, that's the simplest level of where people may not realize that. I mean, what we're doing, fellowshipping or even doing that, is something that can be done to the glory of God apart from
exactly
espousing biblical words.
When we say that we have to have a devotion with a meeting that's a gym night and so forth, what underlies that, the presupposition of that is, well, playing volleyball or basketball, whatever you do in the gym, is unspiritual. And
exactly.
So now we need to balance that by having a devotion that makes it spiritual. When I was in college, I knew people who would be like literature majors, but they weren't studying literature because you can glorify God in the beauty of human expression and stories and poems and so forth. They were doing it because they got good sermon illustrations from literature. Well, I'm not against sermon illustrations, and you can get them from literature, that's fine. But literature has its own dignity and value apart from its homiletical use in a sermon. And we glorify God in our literature. We should glorify God in our entertainments, playing basketball, glorify God in our politics, our economics, because this is His world. He owns it all.
Well, you know, the from a distance, if someone was not a person involved in current issues and that sort of thing, the hot thing now is the ecology. And all of a sudden, even Christians are talking, and by all of a sudden, I mean in a public manner. There may have been plenty of Christians talking about it prior to the last few years, but there weren't any books on it to any great degree or any public forum address. So are you saying that Christians, for example, if they were practicing a biblical worldview, and not that I want to get off on some soapbox on ecology, that they should be at the forefront of this as opposed to in the caboose?
Listen, there was a day when Christians were at the forefront of everything. They wrote the best literature. They were the policymakers in public affairs and so forth. And we have given that up. We enjoyed that kind of leadership and the effects of it long enough that I think many Christians retreated to a more narrow understanding of the Christian faith. It's church life. It's what we do on Sunday. It's our evangelism, our prayer life. And they really have surrendered the world to Satan. And sadly, there are some schools of theology. We don't have to get particular here, but there are some schools of theology in the Christian church that encourage that way of thinking, that, you know, the world belongs to the devil, and we're just waiting for Jesus to return and to get us out of this wretched place. Well, whatever your view is on Jesus' return and so forth, I can assure you no Christian who studies the Bible should say, we're just waiting to get out of here. God has left us here to occupy to His glory and to bring every area of life under His submission to His Word. And that should be our goal.
I was just reading something I even wish I had it in my hand that was talking about the God creating the universe and the various aspects that were created in Genesis, and that they were all commanded to glorify God. They were not given a choice, and at the ultimate end of this item I'm reading is that man was the most ultimate creation because he was given a choice. But anyway, I don't think people realize that. I mean, they kind of know the nice verses in Psalms that talk about the heavens singing the praises, but they're commanded. Now, we may be blinded by our own sinfulness or something like that, but, well, I mean, I guess it's another one of those things. Where did we go, you know, where did we step off the path just a little bit that all of a sudden it, to even think about God's creation as something we should be concerned about is like a new thought?
Yeah, I'm not sure that we can give one answer to how we got off the
oh, well,
path.
I
there
know.
Are a lot
yeah.
of different factors there, but certainly a major factor is our view of God Himself. Our theology has minimized the sovereignty of God. And so God has become something of the rescuer. He is, of course, in the Bible, our Savior, and that's crucial, that's central to the biblical message. But the Savior is the Son of God who is sovereign over all and the Creator over all. Jesus did not come into this world simply to save souls for eternity. He came into this world to save us from sin. Sin, of course, is what corrupted the original creation.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are saved from sin, then in theory we ought to be getting back to doing what God intended human life to be doing all along, and that is to subdue this world to His glory and to use all of the gifts and abilities that have been given to us that His name would be honored. Not just when we go to praise Jesus for our salvation when we're going to heaven. That's important. But we need to realize that He is the recreator of all things and not just the Savior of souls.
This is Encounter. My name is Robin Jones. My guest today is Dr. Greg Bonson, and even though he's several things, what we're really gearing in on by he's several things, he's involved in several things, is apologist and biblical worldview. I guess I would say an advocate of having a biblical worldview. We just have a few minutes left for this segment of the program, and I want to ask in the direction of people a lot of times don't evangelize whatever, however that's manifest in that person's life because of fear of not knowing what to say. And I think they're more fearful of not knowing what to say than they are of rejection, most of them, at least that I know. But another whole area are people are afraid, forget evangelism in the structured sense of the word, they're afraid to even get into dialogue defending their faith, being an apologist. What do you see, what are some words of encouragement you can give to someone in terms of learning how to better defend their faith and not be a, I mean, not, do they always have to have the answers? You know, someone like you, they would think, oh, you can always answer a debate or a question that might come up. But what about the person who may not be as studied, or give them some challenge and encouragement?
There are different levels of our ability to give answers and different levels of, you know, people we talk to, a university professor, the next door neighbor, whatever it may be. But all of us are doing the same thing. We can improve our skills, we can become more sophisticated in our answers, but everyone, every Christian is giving basically the same answer. And here's my word of encouragement. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, he puts out this rhetorical question, where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? See, Paul could say, I'll take on all comers. Bring on whatever philosophy, whatever worldview, whatever point of view you have. God makes foolish the wisdom of this world. And the reason that we can be confident that God will use our witness to make foolish the wisdom of this world is not because he needs brilliance. You know, we have to have all the brain
power.
Or
learnedness.
Yeah, or learnedness, or you know, a college degree, or a PhD, something. It's because the world is so wrong.
It's one of those
so obvious things.
They
fall under their own weight. It's just a matter of knowing, one, the types of questions to ask and issues to push, and also having the kind of personality that has a humble boldness to do this. It has to be humble. We don't go in arrogantly thinking we're smarter than others and so forth. If it weren't for the grace of God, we wouldn't believe these things either. He had to change our hearts and give us the gift of faith. So we know that it's not arrogance to do it. But we have to be bold in our humility too, because the one that we represent is the sovereign God over heaven and earth. And Paul tells us in Romans chapter 1 that when people suppress the truth about God, they become vain in their reasoning. Can I give you a quick illustration of
very,
that?
Well, in fact, we better take, let's take a break and hold on to that. We're going to talk about that illustration in a second. We're also going to come back, and I have a question that I know is out of my heart as well as many listeners, is what should people like, or ministries like KQCV and other public forum ministries do relative to presenting both sides of an issue? And I think that really falls under what you're talking about in terms of biblical worldviews.
Well, we've got to do that because we have answers, and if we're afraid to encounter the world, what we're telling the world is we're not really sure that we have the answers.
And we're going to talk about that with Dr. Greg Bonson and Encounter in just a moment. Welcome back to Encounter. My name is Robin Jones. My guest today is Dr. Greg Bonson. He is an apologist, and he is through Oklahoma visiting, doing some apologist-type work at OSU in Stillwater, and we appreciate him coming by. We will give his address at the end of the program, so you might be listening, but I cut you off before you were getting ready to give an illustration.
Yeah, I was trying to give an illustration of how easy it is to defend the Christian faith when you do an internal critique of your opponent's worldview. That is, you take their beliefs, their most basic convictions about reality, how we know what we know, and how we should live our lives. And the unbelieving worldview falls of its own weight. It isn't as though you've got to study and have all the answers to all the questions they might have. You can always ask for time. Say, well, you know, I don't know how to answer that question, but I'm sure there is an answer. Give me, you know, some time, and I'll get back to you on that. But when you're talking to unbelievers, let them tell you what they believe, you know, and see if it all hangs together. I went to college during the Vietnam War. And when I would go to secular campuses and evangelize, it was always humorous to me, but of course tragic too, for the implications of the individual you're talking to. You'd hear people talk about, if a guy was living with his girlfriend, he'd say, well, you know, when it comes to morality, it's different strokes for different folks. It's like, you know, everybody makes up his own mind. And yet these very same people would be out there burning banks and protesting wildly against the United States being involved in Vietnam. Now, whether we should be in Vietnam or not, it's not the issue here. What's of interest to me is that you have a person who says, on the one hand, morality is completely open-ended. So when it comes to my sexual life, I make up my own mind. But then we can have an absolute standard by which we condemn the United States for going to war in Vietnam. And what we as Christians have to do is say, no, see, in your worldview, you can't put those two together. That's oil and water. You can't reconcile these sorts of things. Or unbelievers will tell you, we can only know those things that we learn through our senses. You know, if you don't observe it, if you don't touch it or taste it or see it or hear it, whatever, that you can't know it. And we have to say, well, but now that statement that we can only know what we observe, did you observe that to be true? And so the unbeliever says, well, no. And say, well, you see, you can't even live by the worldview, by the philosophical premises that you're putting out there. Now, when I say philosophic, that sometimes, you know, scares people. But philosophy is just a matter of, you know, our ultimate commitments about the nature of reality and how we know what we know and how we should live our lives. And so just to sum up the illustration, people should be confident, as Paul was, to say, where is the debater of this age? Bring on your philosophy. Hasn't God made foolish the wisdom of this world?
And when you were using your illustration specifically of somebody having standards in one area but not in another with your campus illustration, that's one of my personal, and I know many of our listeners, personal frustrations. It's like, and I hate to lump everything together, but in general, the secular, and I even noted you said secular university. I even resist saying that, even though I understand what we're using.
It's common parlance, but nothing is secular.
Exactly, and that's kind of. But in the national media or in the media in general, it's just hysterical because they won't. They do the same thing. It's like, They're saying they're presenting two sides, and in reality they're not, and the fact that we allow them to have their opinion, but they don't allow us, by us, the Christians, to have our opinion.
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
Like, oh, ooh.
Robin, one of the lectures I give on, here we go, secular campuses,
yeah.
is what your professors are afraid to tell you. And I do that because there is this myth out there that they're giving all points of view and then they're arguing for their own. And as a Christian who's been through the university life and so forth, I've got advanced degrees, my PhD and so forth, you don't hear all sides from the secular professors that you have and so forth. If they may humor themselves that they're doing that, but they don't. When I go on campus and I say, now, in your economics class or in your biology class and so forth, do you consider these sorts of things? Were you told this and so forth? No, they aren't. Actually, it's only Christians that have the ability and the courage to present both sides to an issue because we have answers. And we don't think that the truth is advanced by hiding from opposition. We think the truth can be defended. We put it out there. And so we like to silence our opponents by answering their objections and refuting what they have to say rather than silencing them in advance by not giving them an opportunity to speak.
Well, and in talking about that, and that comes up a lot here at KQCV, and in a way, the way I need to present this question in a way that's neutral, and that is that it's obvious to me that most of the media doesn't allow you to present both sides of an issue. And whether we're looking at what we perceive as Christian issues or a lot of issues, they don't let you present both sides. I think the Christians' issues are the most obvious, so to speak. Even saying Christian issues I don't like, because all of issues God is interested in. But I struggle with presenting both sides of an issue, for example, here on the station, because that's true. I mean, if we're going to go in just pure content numbers, we're not given that. So why should I give them the opportunity with our audience to hear both sides? Do you see what I'm saying? When they hear the quote unquote other side all the time out there, why should we lend time to that on a station like KQCV? Do you understand my question?
I do. The reason you should is because, first of all, your hearers are going to be further down the road in their Christian understanding and education for having heard both sides and hearing the truth prevail over what is erroneous. Secondly, God is glorified when the errors that are circulating out there, let's not, you know, pretend otherwise, those people that you have on, that you may not like their point of view, if you don't have them on, their point of view is still going out. It's just that you're not getting the opportunity to follow and tag along with them to answer them. So you bring them in and you say, present your views here, because we have an answer for that. One of the better-known radio announcers out in Southern California, I won't mention the name, had me on recently to talk about homosexuality. He had a man. I know this is hard to believe, and I don't wish to gross your hearers out.
Well,
here's a man.
Sure you don't.
I won't. But he claimed to be an evangelical Christian.
Oh, okay.
He believed Jesus was the Savior, but homosexuality was perfectly all right. Well, I've written a book on that subject, and so the radio station had me come in and talk to him. Now, in the middle of this, it was a call-in format. One of the people called in and challenged the host of the show. He said, why do you bother to let this pervert come on your show and say these things? Anybody who reads the Bible knows that he's wrong. And so he was defending this. And I said, the reason we do it is so that people will go to the Bible and see that he's wrong, and they won't be, you know, put down and confused and thwarted out there in the world when they hear these sorts of things. I think it's to our advantage as Christians to let the world speak, because we have a way of answering.
God is the God of all truth.
That's right.
Whether it's between the two black covers of our Bible or not. We're almost out of time. You're listening to Encounter. My guest today is Dr. Greg Bahnsen. He is going through Oklahoma. He is not a resident, and I have a feeling he's proud that he's not a resident, that he's from California.
I didn't say a word to that effect.
But he is involved with a ministry that I'll give you an opportunity to mention just briefly a description
sure.
of it. And you mentioned earlier that we need to know the questions to ask and the direction to go, and if you have some materials on
Yeah,
that.
I'm really excited. The Southern California Center for Christian Studies specializes in providing tapes and written material and even correspondence courses to Christians who would like to improve their understanding of what the Bible teaches, how to defend it, and how to apply it to all areas of life. You don't have to move your family across country, go to a college or to a seminary. We can provide that kind
of education.
Or become a
genius.
Yeah, or
See, that's
that either.
The fear. You know, they feel so inadequate.
The title of the apologetic series I'm doing here in Oklahoma, by the way, is Taking It to the Streets. Now, that I hope, communicates something. We believe that this is not just for ivory tower intellectuals. It's not just for pastors or for Christian teachers. All Christians can take their faith to the streets, and they are competent to defend it. I have trained hundreds of Christians to be able to do that, who started out thinking, well, I don't even know the vocabulary and so forth. At the Southern California Center for Christian Studies, we've put together programs of study, individual tapes, and we'd love to serve your clientele here. If they would like to write to us free of charge, we'll send them our monthly newsletter and catalog, and they can see if there's something that might help them, strengthen them to defend the faith. At P.O. Box 18021 in Irvine, I-R-V-I-N-E, California, 92713. We'd be glad to write to them.
And we'll keep that address on, because very seldom do people have the pen right then to write it down. So we will keep that address on file here at the station. We appreciate you coming by today.
Oh, it's been
Is this your first time in Oklahoma?
No, I've been here before.
Okay.
It's a lovely state.
Well, the only reason I said that is I thought he was from Kentucky, and he was like, Kentucky? I'm from California. So that's the only reason I made that comment. So
yes.
We appreciate you being with us, and we appreciate the group in Stillwater allowing us to use your time. Also, I believe it's the Christian Media Society that's sponsoring this event up in Stillwater, and it's kind of exciting for me. I hear a lot more about what goes on at OU, so it's kind of exciting to know that there's people doing this in a really provocative way that's honoring to God up in Stillwater, too, at OSU.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Encounter, and that's it for today's program.